Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod with guidance from Dax. Each show expands on the language, ideas, and insights from economic thought that can empower and enlighten the journey through your inner environment toward healing, creativity, and spiritual expression.
And Terry, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. How about yourself?
Well, hello everyone to the first episode of Economics in the Spiritual Path. Maybe we should just get down to it. So, economics and spirituality, how does that all go together? Well, the nexus has to deal with decision making and behaviors and what we experience. At the core of it, behavior is an expression of the decisions and choices we make, and our experiences are the impressions that result from these behaviors, and also from the impressions that we get from making decisions and choices and our experience of ourselves in them. So conventional economic thought understands decisions as choice being the outcome of preferences given constraints. So what does that mean? Well, constraints, some people don't like that word, so you can understand it as opportunities or what's feasible. All three of them work the same way. So given what you can do, you have preferences over what you'd like the outcome to be. That is the core of economics, wanting to make the most of the resources you have, most of the opportunities you have. Associated with that is that decisions can be understood as occurring when you cut away certain opportunities or what's feasible. There are times in our lives where we're not ready to choose, but we know enough of, well, I don't want that. So that's one way of understanding what a decision is. If you actually go back to the origin of the word decision, decidere, which actually means to cut away. So seems appropriate to say that that's what you're doing. You're cutting away certain opportunities. You're cutting away certain branches of the decision tree. On the other hand, choices occur when you invest your willpower in a particular alternative. So in the contrast to a decision, you're saying, okay, that's not what I want. I'm going to focus on these things. But a choice is when you're actually putting energy towards a particular outcome. We often use the words decision and choice kind of interchangeably. But it's useful to have that distinction. So now I've also used another word, willpower. And willpower can be understood as the capacity to change the probability of an outcome. What does that mean? Well, you know, in the big world that we're in, we do have influence over the world, you know, in our choices. But it's rare that we have perfect control or absolute power. We can make a choice, and then depending on how other people make choices or, you know, the random things that happen in life, we may get what we want. We might get something close to what we want, or we might not get anything at all what we expected. So the notion of willpower is that ability to change the probability of an outcome. You know, basically, if you're willing yourself to something, you're trying to make it more likely to happen. And what we want to experience and who we want to be are foundational to finding value in the things that we have and what we do. So in the process of making our decisions, we not only, you know, try to get what we want, what we desire, but we also express who we are. And sometimes, you know, we discover who we are in the choices that we make. And sometimes we're surprised, sometimes we're delighted, sometimes we're shocked about who we are. And so that's kind of where the nexus of economics and the spiritual path come together. You know, the discovery of who you are, well, that's typically within some kind of environment. You know, either, you know, your work environment, or if you're lucky enough to go away for a retreat, you know, maybe it's really nice, quiet, foresty environment. But within those environments, there are possibilities to experience things, including experiencing ourselves. So with that little bit of an introduction, Terry, would you like to join in and say anything?
Well, I was just, I'm listening, and, you know, we talked Thursday, and I'm just really excited about this concept of applying a spiritual component to our decision-making and applying the manner of the way we make decisions and the decisions we actually make, applying that back to our spirituality and the cyclical nature of this, how one reinforces the other, which feeds the other, is really a fascinating concept. And, you know, you've really sparked a lot of thought in me and a lot of discussion in my household, to be honest with you. So I'm really fascinated with what you're presenting and looking forward to hearing more.
I appreciate those very kind words. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I hope that our listeners embrace this the way I'm anticipating embracing it myself. And, you know, coming in with an open mind and listening to maybe not a new approach, but certainly a new explanation from a different angle. And, you know, we talked the other night about that rock, that boulder in the road, and I'm looking at it from one side and you're looking at it from another side. And we're talking about a lot of the same things, but hearing your approach to that rock is certainly refreshing. And I hope that others give this the chance to look at your side of the rock.
Well, that is a very visual way to describe it. I like it. Well, you know, sometimes it's useful to see what you're hearing, and sometimes it's useful to hear what you're seeing.
Well played.
So there's another distinction, I think a very important distinction to make that is useful in seeing how everything ties together, and that is the distinction between internal and external environments. So, usually we think about environment as being, that which is outside of ourselves. We live within an environment, if you get into biology, you might talk about, species living within an environment. But if you can make that distinction between internal and external, well, external environment, that's what we're used to. But the internal environment is essentially that which is inside of ourselves. And, while you certainly could talk about, all the organs and all that kind of stuff inside, the body, in terms of decision-making, the internal environment would be what's internal to the decision-maker. And at the core of that are going to be things like beliefs and paradigms and desires and purpose, all the types of things that influence how we make a decision. And so by seeing that as another type of environment, it enables you to kind of ask similar questions like, okay, so what is the structure there? What is the dynamic? Is what I want always the same? Clearly what we want when we're, 50 is usually quite a bit different than what we wanted when we were 10. So that's kind of an obvious one. But there's also other interesting dynamics because, what you want when you wake up to have breakfast is a different type of thing that you're focusing on than when you're at work or if you're, out on a date or if you're out chopping wood. The specific of the space and the environment that you're working in not only changes what's possible in the specific moment, but it also changes, what your focus is on what your concerns are. And so that has a very interesting dynamic that we'll explore throughout all the next few weeks.
Well, would you also include our own personal internal dialogue as part of that environment?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that can be actually some of the more challenging, right? Because once you have more than one voice going on in your head, and I'm not necessarily talking in terms of mental health issues or anything like that, just more than one thing that's attracting you. It's like, I want to go to see a movie, but I also want to get a jog in. So, the part of you that wants to go to the movie is going to have a little negotiation with the part of you that wants to get a jog in or a walk in. And, sometimes we can do that smoothly, and, sometimes, if we're in an uptight place, it kind of gets out of hand, even though it's just a really simple, it seems like a simple choice.
I was also thinking about how internally we think of ourselves, the value that we place on ourselves internally.
Mm-hmm.
We usually present some kind of outward level of confidence, but what do we really think inside? How do we really feel about ourselves inside? And how does that affect our decision-making process?
Yeah, that is a very excellent point. Clearly self-perception is going to be a huge guide, not only in terms of, what I think I should want or what I should do, but in terms of, when you're going to be daring, when do you, step up and express yourself or, just sit back and, let the world move around you. And again, as you talked before about the feedback, it's really challenging to build up confidence in yourself without actually making a choice, expressing yourself in the world, and discovering what kind of energy and power that you have to influence the things around you. That can just, if you're a little bit in doubt, sometimes you just have that little chatter in your head, but, you don't let it stop you. And then sometimes if you get overwhelmed with that chatter, you just end up sitting in your room, just letting the world go by. Or not taking proper care of yourself, exactly. And that's another element that gets involved with all this, too. It's, what we do in terms of the choices we make, the food we buy, if we have a gym or, what exercise we choose to do, the people that we surround ourselves with. They do affect who we are. They don't necessarily affect that there is a who there. There is a who there, but how we perceive our who and how we understand what it is that's constructive for us is certainly influenced by all these other things.
And that's all part of that internal environment that you were referring to.
Exactly. And okay. Another reason to understand... Oops, sorry, go ahead.
I just said okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And so another reason why it's useful to understand in terms of an internal and external environment, because when we look out in the world and there are other people, and so we can understand, anything that gets to make decisions and makes a choice and can affect the outcome of what's going on in the world is, has a certain quality as a person. Now, it may not be human, but that leaves us with looking out at the external world and recognizing that there are a lot of internal spaces in that external world. So every person, every human we run into, almost all of them are going to have some kind of internal environment that they're working with. And so even though when we perceive the world and we think about ourselves or we're reflecting on ourselves and, we feel it as an internal environment, we're part of the external environment for other people. And that's another layer of feedback loop. That recognition that we're both internal and external at the same time. And to me, that's a place where that kind of insight really opens up a lot of interesting questions and a lot of interesting introspection along the spiritual path. How am I connected with other people, for example? When I'm in a community, is there a higher self that I'm, being charged to let them express themselves through me, for example? And the basic question of, well, who's making the choice? How does more than one person at a time make a choice simultaneously? Very, very interesting and deep questions, especially as one is exploring their own spiritual nature.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing how this all ties to spirituality and our spiritual path. And how this can, this understanding will help us to better walk our paths, better select our paths, better understand our paths, each of our own individual paths. And if I'm understanding correctly, part of this is to help us define within ourselves what our path really is based on decisions we have made and help us with decisions we will have to make.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. With that, I'd like to step a little bit deeper into this with something that can be understood as coulda, shoulda, woulda. How's that sound?
Oh, absolutely. What if?
Okay. So, coulda, shoulda, woulda. Well, you know, I think almost all of us have heard that phrase before, and, you know, people, you know, typically say that when, if a friend of theirs, you know, were being sad about they didn't do something, or they're upset about they didn't do something, or trying to, you know, explain, you know, away why it didn't happen. And sometimes you'll say, oh, yeah, coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, about something that's already happened. However, coulda, shoulda, woulda is a very powerful tool for considering what has yet to happen, okay, that which you're still in a position to make decisions and choices about. So how we decide and what we choose is based on what we can do, what we shall do, and what we want to do. So the coulda part, one way of understanding that is that it's what we can do is part of our exogenous constraints. So a little bit before we talked about preferences and constraints, and exogenous means that it originates outside of ourselves. So what's an example of an exogenous constraint? Well, like the physical laws, the material resources we have in a particular moment, the social structures we have in a particular moment, it's the situation that we find ourselves in that particular moment. And it's these things that determine what is feasible. So the coulda part is, from an economist's standpoint, about what is feasible. Then there's shoulda. And shoulda is about what we shall do. And these are our endogenous constraints. So the shoulda is about how we constrain ourselves, okay? And what does that mean? Well, you know, sometimes it's about morality. You know, sometimes we say, no, shouldn't do that. You know, like you shouldn't steal, right? Or you shouldn't murder someone. So that's one aspect. But another aspect that we run into all the time has to deal with the disciplines and commitments that we make. So, for example, if you decide that you want to get yourself in shape, well, you have to commit yourself to exercise on a regular basis. It's an endogenous constraint because basically there's nothing out in the world that requires you to have to exercise, right? It's not like if you decided I'm not going to exercise, you're still going to exercise. No, you have to commit to exercising. And in particular, in order to get the benefits, you have to commit to exercising on a regular basis. So it's not like a one-off thing, you know, where you exercise today and, okay, you don't have to worry about it for the rest of your life. You have to exercise every day. And when you exercise every day, what happens is that changes what's feasible. So there's an interesting relationship between the coulda and shoulda. And another way of understanding shoulda is that it's about what we hold as acceptable. So when you make a commitment, or if you have a certain set of morals, or you have a certain discipline, it's not about what's feasible, it's about what you find is acceptable. And
okay.
It's this intersection of what's feasible and acceptable that really narrows down the alternatives or opportunities that we consider. Because that's interesting about the relationship about the coulda and shoulda is that the shoulda is very much about how you constrain yourself through time, and the coulda is more about how you're constrained in a particular moment. So when you take on these commitments or these disciplines, they have this, you know, almost magical property that by taking them on, by consistently keeping to them, over time, you change what is feasible. And you know, that's part of the power that we have over our lives and, you know, who we can be. That's coulda, coulda, and shoulda. Then there's the woulda. Woulda is about what we want to do, want to have, want to do. And they're about our external preferences. So our what we prefer the world around us to be like, you know, what we prefer to experience. And these are about the goals and aspirations that we find desirable. So that's an important part there. So the coulda is about what's feasible, the shoulda is about what's acceptable, and the woulda is about what is desirable. Now, there is actually one more piece that really pulls it all together, and I refer to that as the wasa. So if you coulda done this, or you shoulda done this, or you woulda done that, the other possibility is, you know, if I was a that type person, then I would have done it. So the wasa is about who we want to be, and it's our internal preferences. So remember before I talked about internal and external environment? Who we prefer to be. You know, do we prefer to be honest? Do we prefer to be sensitive? Do we prefer to be strong? Do we prefer to be demanding? Do we prefer to be aggressive? Preference is over who we are. That's
so does that also refer to who we think we are?
Oh, sometimes it's about who we think we are. This is true. And it's sometimes who we think we are is not exactly the same as who we want to be. Right?
I agree with you completely. When the two of those meet, it's a wonderful thing.
Oh, yes. Yes. When what you want is the same as what you have, that is the nature of happiness. So those internal preferences, they're about the essential spirit and ways of being that we find inspirable. So when you have these four, you have these, you know, this kind of nice way of being able to pull apart the decision-making process, the choices you make. So this feasible, this acceptable, this desirable, this inspirable. And the way this can get connected immediately with spirit and the spiritual path is the recognition that these preferences, what economists would call preferences, they're nothing other than the spirit of the decision-maker. It's what animates us when we make a choice or we make a decision. It's what drives us to, you know, do some major work or, you know, drives us to get those plaid pants with the polka dot shirt. If you got some crazy flavor of attire. You know, it's what drives us to in ritual, or it's what drives us to have nothing to do with, you know, God or gods or anything like that. So those preferences, that is our spirit, and by understanding it that way, it immediately opens up several ways of describing spirit. So one way of understanding our spirit is sort of the direction it wants to take us, okay? You know, what is the vision that we have? You know, what we find pleasurable in our experiences? So that's about a direction. Then you can kind of talk about amplitude. When someone has a big spirit, you know, when you run into someone with a big spirit, it's clear that they have strong feelings about how they want the world to be. That's one thing. But another big spirit is that it's more encompassing than just who they are, right? So someone with a big spirit takes into account the well-being of other people, or takes into account the well-being of animal friends, or of the land, or of a business, or, you know, of a nation. So that's another thing. So it's not just direction, but it's also this kind of amplitude, this size. And so that gives us a number of ways of looking at spirit, that when we do spiritual work, sometimes it's about, you know, making our spirit larger. Sometimes it's about making our spirit a little bit smaller, you know, if we need to be a little, give more room to other people, for example. Sometimes in life we need to give room to other people, and we just kind of, I mean, it doesn't change what we want, but we just, you know, chill out a little bit. And so when you're doing spiritual work, you know, there's a big difference about whether it's about being a bigger spirit or a smaller spirit, or about discovering or inventing the direction that you want your spirit to be moving. So it really gets at the choice of, when you're doing spiritual work, what is the spiritual work about? And that's the deepest question. And it's a choice. And it's a choice based on how you want to experience the world and how you want to express in the world.
Well, very cool. I've got some questions, but why don't we go ahead and take our break?
Okay, so we're going to take a little musical break?
Absolutely. I think it's a perfect
time. Okay.
Let's
see, how about something from Ritual Drummers? That sounds pretty good. Okay.
All right. Something from the Dragon Ritual Drummers. Yeah.
Okay.
Utu's one of our favorite people. So, what did you have in mind?
How about Shango?
Shango's a good one.
Okay.
Shango is a great one.
Shall I start it?
Yes, please.
Here we go.
We'll be right back.
Shango. International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
There is one power in the universe, and we are perfect manifestations of that power.
And as such, we pray. We pray for peace. We pray for love. We pray for stability. We pray for the nation in which we live. We pray for the world.
We will it. We manifest it. We draw it to us. We receive it, we accept it, and we give thanks for it. And by our will, so mote it be.
We return to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Terry, you
there?
Hey,
I'm here.
All right, there we go. All right. So there was like one or two more things I wanted to say to kind of complete the gestalt, so to speak, if I may.
Oh, sure, sure.
And I'm someone who likes to ask. So one important other concept to tie all this together, which I find very useful exploring, you know, one's own spirit and spirituality, is the relationship between needs and wants. Because in our everyday language, we sometimes get the two confused. And depending on which one we use, it can either leave us empowered or clear that we're stating something or feeling vulnerable. So what I suggest is that needs are what are necessary to fulfill your wants. So there's very little in the world that you need to have, except as that it fulfills a specific want. So, for example, people will say, "Well, sometimes they'll say that's ridiculous. I mean, you need air, you need food, you need water," we pretty much understand what that means. But what I would suggest is, if you're really looking and reflecting, it really raises the question of, well, what do you need air and water and food for? You need it to survive. So what is the want that's driving the fact that those are needs? It's the fact that you want to be alive. And where that's useful is that, again, instead of you know, having the relationship with air and water and food as being needy, you know, you come back and you say, well, I want to be alive. You know, I'm choosing to be alive. And within the context that I'm choosing to do this, then there are some things that I need. But that's coming from a place of strength as compared to a place of vulnerability. You know, it's looking at the world and saying, okay, what resources do I need to express what I want from and of the world or from and of myself? So that's I think that's an important way to understand the relationship between need and want that can be very useful as you're exploring your spiritual path.
And empowering.
You know, sometimes when you say, you know, at the core, it's something that I want, then, you know, it's your choice. It's a way of claiming choice. Yeah.
Right, I need is imposed upon me. I want is empowering.
That's
I
right.
I choose.
Exactly.
I choose. I want. I choose. I need is external in so many ways. It's like imposed upon me. I need air to survive. No, I want air to be alive. I want to be alive.
Yes,
I like that
exactly.
analogy.
Yeah.
And... It turns the impetus from external to internal.
Exactly. And
it's,
you know, that's
empowering or victimizing, depending on how you choose.
Yep. And that's why I put that out there for people to have as an option. Now, there may be points in your life where, you know, what you want to express is like, I need this, when you're, you know, trying to say, hey, imperative, got to be dealt with right now. But many times, yeah, being able to say, you know, I want air to stay alive, or I want a better paying job so I can have the home that I want, or I want my friends to appreciate me so that I can be there for them in a bigger way.
The way you expressed it, if need grows out of want rather than want growing out of need, then we are choosing.
Yeah.
And I want a new house. Well, I need to do these things, or I need to find a better job. And it puts the impetus on me rather than the impetus being placed from outside.
Yes. And you just said something very important there. You know, that distinction of, you know, is it the need that's coming from the want or want coming from the need? When we're not careful about what's going on internally, when we're not, you know, tending to our spiritual aspects, one of the things that we tend to do is we change our desires, we change our goals to fit what's happening around us. You know, because at the core of happiness is this alignment of, you know, what you're experiencing with what you want to experience. And it can work either way. You know, if you know you're going to have a certain thing and you can't get around it, it's easy to change your want so that you want what you're going to get.
The trap is to fall into settling, though.
Right. And it's that challenge of not, you know, avoiding being lazy about your spiritual side, you know, about making sure that you don't change your goals and your aspirations because, you know, it just makes life easier if I'm, you know, if I don't want more than what I have.
Right. Yeah, not settling for, this is the best I can have, so I might as well accept it and be happy and align my wants with what I have, and therefore I'm happy.
Right, right. Now, that doesn't preclude the possibility of choosing to be happy even though you're, you know, you're going through challenges.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we can choose to be happy in the moment. Absolutely. You know, I mean, that's a choice we make every moment.
Right.
Somebody at work the other day asked me how I can be happy so much with all that's going on. And I said, because I choose to be. And they looked at me like I'd grown another head.
Yeah, yeah.
I choose to be happy. I have to be here. I have to be here because this is the way that I feed my kids and pay my bills. You know, I'm going to have to be at this place. I can choose to enjoy myself and find ways to be happy, or I can choose to be a miserable hag. Either way,
right.
I'm going to be here, so... You know,
yeah.
How I approach it is my choice, not someone else's.
Yes, exactly. And it's a useful to remind people that sometimes to get what you deeply want, you have to show up as happy, because that can be very inspiring to other people. And happiness has a psychological energy, a physical energy, which enables you to be more effective in the world.
Mm-hmm. And it's infectious.
And the nature of it is inspiring. You know, you certainly can scare people if you want to kind of like, you know, get them to go into a certain corner and, you know, box them in so that they'll behave the way you want them to behave. You can always do that, but that is really limiting because they're not going to bring their best game. They're not going to bring inspirations. You know, they're not going to, challenge you to even be better than who you are now. So, and being able to be a choice about happiness can be very useful. Besides, also happy.
Yeah, you know, don't worry, be happy. Now, I had a couple of questions about some stuff. Were you finished? I don't want to cut you off.
Just one last thought, and that is the whole thing about the feeds, the coulda, shoulda, woulda, wuzza, the feasible, acceptable, desirable, inspirable. Well, the coulda is actually sort of the realm of science about, you know, how does the world around us actually work? What are our limitations in practical terms? So that's a very scientific way of relating to the world. The shoulda, what's acceptable, that is sort of a religious way of relating to the world. You know, it's like, these are, the rules, the structure by which I am going to guide my behavior. The woulda, the desirable, that is very much an artistic way of understanding the world. If I give them the canvas that I have, what will be my most beautiful picture that I can make? You know, given the clay that I have, you know, what is the most inspiring sculpture can I create? And then the wuzza, the inspirable, that is the spiritual. You know, that which works with spirit directly, with our preferences about who we are, that's the deep spiritual. And so you can take these four components, this coulda, shoulda, woulda, wuzza, and understand that economic choice is at the nexus of science, religion, art, and spirit. And so that no matter what you have to deal with in the economic world, it brings in what you understand about science, you know, what your religion is, you know, what your artistic sensibility is, and, you know, and what your spirit is about. So when I talk about economics and spirit and people go, how do you get that? It is there. You, in a way, I could say this, you cannot avoid spirit in economics because that is what motivates your decision-making and your choices. You could pretend that, you know, oh, I'm just focusing on material thing, but you're not. And similarly, if you're doing spiritual work, you cannot avoid the fact that that's going to have an expression in the material world. If you've changed something in your spiritual life, that will show up in your choices and your behaviors and what gets expressed in the external environment.
Okay. Well, you actually addressed a couple of my questions, but it raised another one. So a lot of people will say, but I'm religious. I mean, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And if I understand what you were saying, you're saying that the two go together, whether it's organized religion or not. The rules we apply to ourselves in the shuddha is based on our understanding of the divine, our connection to the divine. That set of rules that we apply to ourselves is our religion by definition.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It is the expression of our belief structure is religion, whether it's organized
exactly,
or whether anybody else agrees with it.
You can be a religious person even if you don't believe in God. You're a religious person if you have a set of rules that you structure your life by and they're immovable. That is being religious.
I so enjoy our conversation.
Likewise.
So we are hurtling toward the top of the hour, but I have one other thought occurred to me. It seemed to me like you were expressing that the coulda could also be a learning lesson. I could, or I should have, or whatever in the past, if I look at that with what is my current environment, I can learn about future decisions based on past decisions and learn from them and move forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we go on with this series, time is a very important element, the relationship between, you know, who we are as decision makers and how we evolve spiritually. Time in the sense of how much time do we have to make a decision? How far into the future are we considering? And it's unavoidable. So the clearer that we are about our relationship to the past, the present, and the future, you know, how they all go together, the more effective we can be in, you know, choices around our spiritual development.
All right. And that will be a perfect time to have a conversation about the true nature of time, but we'll not go there tonight.
But not tonight.
And, yeah, my only final question, and we are really running up against the top of the hour and time for you to tell people how to get in touch with you, but where does what if fit into this? Is
yeah,
that part of the
coulda? Again?
Where does
yes.
What if?
What if?
Yeah.
What if is the consideration of what are the consequences? And that is also a very important element of economics. It's, you know, you start off with, okay, if I go to the left, and then you say, okay, well, what if I go to the left? What's the next things I've got to face? And that's why there's a term that's used in economics called the decision tree. And what that means is you start off with one decision, You know, are you going to go left or are you going to go right? Are you going to buy chocolate ice cream or are you going to buy vanilla ice cream? You know, are you going to live in the city or are you going to live in the suburbs? So that's like that first decision that you make. But once you make that decision, then you have another set of decisions that come after that. So if I'm going to live in the city, okay, am I going to live in a tall apartment building or am I going to live in a brownstone? I'm going to live in the suburbs. Is it going to be an apartment? Is it going to be a townhouse? Is it going to be a home? And so that's another decision that you make. And every time you, like, conjecture going forward, and I go, okay, if I make that decision, then what's the decision after that? And then after that. And so you can imagine these, all these branches leading to other branches, and it just goes off into infinity. And so all of that is what if. And it can be daunting if you're trying to really take into account all the possible things that can go on. At the same time, it can also be really enlightening, both because you might, you know, you start thinking about consequences that you'd never thought about before. That's one thing. And the other thing is just by opening up to considering all the different consequences, you're going to discover some stuff about your spirit, about the preferences that you have, because you may not have never considered that before. That, okay, if I've got to make that choice, how would I make that choice? So that vision of that decision tree, that is the structure by which we conjecture and ask those questions, what if?
Okay, well, I think that harm none, in its truest sense, calls us to make the most conscious decisions that we have available to us.
Yes, I agree with that.
And to consider the consequences. Harm none, I think, is taken to some extremes, and that's another topic for a different show, I think. But that consciousness and the depth of the consideration we give to making decisions is what we are called to when we refer to harm none, in my opinion.
Yes.
From my perspective. So anyway, well, very cool. I have enjoyed sharing your premiere tonight. Thank you. I am honored.
And thank you for giving me the space. I am honored as well.
So how does somebody get in touch with you? And then we can sign off and wish everyone a good night.
Okay. If you want to contact me by email, you can either write me at daxe@daxe.com, so dax at dax.com, or you can go to my other website, davidaxeroddphd.com, and then you can send me a message from there. So David Axelrod, AXELROD PhD.com, or just email me directly at dax@dax.com.
All right, very cool. Well, again, thanks for letting me be here with you tonight.
My pleasure, and thank you for giving me the space. Much appreciated.
All right, so however you're going to be signing off, I think it's about time for us to clear the air.
Time for us to depart. Okay. Have a good night, everybody, and remember to find the choice wherever you can.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.